It is almost as difficult to keep a first-rate person in a second-class job as it is to keep a second-rate person in a first-class job. This is Thought for Today. Dr. Herbert L. Byerly here, Dean at the University of Healing in Campbell, California. It's almost as difficult to keep a first-rate person in a second-class job as it is to keep a second-rate person in a first-class job. Interesting comment. Why would this be true? Why would this be true? It has nothing to do with the first-rate person or second-rate person being rated by society or being rated by their family, but being rated by themselves. Now, we have on campus here a scale of rating for people here. And of course, I'm number one. And then everybody else is like sixth and seventh and eighth and ninth, you know, because they don't have respect for themselves. Now, whatever respect you have for yourself, I give that to you. I am number one. I respect myself completely, and so I respect everybody in my world. But if you won't let me in to respect you as a first-class person, then I respect you as I am, but you don't respect yourself as a first-class person. If you ever say something like has been said here, somebody else wanted this way, somebody else wanted that, somebody else wanted this, if you ever say that, you're saying, I'm a hundredth-rate person. I'm way down at the bottom. But if you ever say, what would you like me to do? I'm happy to do it. What would you like me to say? I'm happy to say it. How would you like me to express myself? You know, more completely, more wonderfully, I'm happy to do it. Now, are you able to do that? Are you able to do that for yourself? Are you able to be the kind of person that that you really are, number one? Yes. Are you able to do that?
Yes.
Well, if you're able to do that, then it shows. Now, we had a guest here yesterday and the day before, his name was Joel. And when Joel came here, he was very reserved. He was a guest of his friend who he was with. And he cooperated and acted with the program, however it was asked of him. But he was very reserved and very, very laid back. And the more longer he was here, the more he realized, you know, that we were friendly people, then he became a more friendly person. But at all times, he maintained his dignity. At all times, he maintained the integrity of who he was. And he would not give answers without first thinking about it. And he would first have all sorts, you could see the wheels going around in his head, you could see all the activity going on. But you see, he did not feel belittled here, nor did he feel ennobled. He was who he was. He was a very fine young man. Now, the longer we knew him, the more we got to know him, the more we felt a very great simpatico with him. We felt he was a very fine young man. And this is a very important thing for all of us. Now, did he do anything special? Did he act in any way special? Did he say, I'm number one, I'm great, I'm this, I'm that? No, he didn't say any of those things. All he did was to act like who he was. He likes himself. He's a very mannerly person. He thought of saying thank you before he said, gimme. And how many of us are like that? We get here at the monastery, and one of the early things that we do here at the monastery, or at the University of Healing, whatever we're going to call this place here, the first thing we do is to forget to say thank you. It's our right to have breakfast. It's our right to have lunch. It's our right to have dinner. It's our right to use the laundry machine. It's our right to have our desk and our computer. It's our right to have all these things. And I want just what everybody else has. If everybody else has this, I want this. And that's my right. Even though I don't need it, even though I don't use it, even though I have no idea how to use it, it's my right. And that goes for all of you. For all of you. Every piece of equipment that I have, you would very much like to have. Because it's your right to have it because you're here. Well, none of us have any rights. What we have is courtesy. And we say, wow, that's a beautiful machine you got there. Can I see how it works? Hey, that's good. That's wonderful. That would be perfect for doing my job. That'd be perfect for this. That'd be perfect for that. You see, the minute you say that, right away the door is closed. It has nothing to do with whether you could get it or not get it. It's that you have a right, and no, nobody has any rights. All we have is the right to be ourselves and enjoy life. Be ourselves and have fun. If we ever think we have the right to do anything because of the work we do or the place that we are or the person we are, then we have missed a great deal. Now, we have a lot of second-rate citizens here on campus. And the reason that we have a lot of second-rate citizens here on campus is because you don't respect yourself. You think you have rights to things, and you don't have a right to anything. You are working for the university. You are working for the Church of God Unlimited. You're working for the organization. And your first thought should be, how can I do my job more efficiently? How can I be more wonderful? Have I said thank you to my boss? You know, we're so worried about our boss saying, good job, man, good job. Good job there, girl. You know, we want the boss to do it, but have we ever said thank you to the boss? Have we ever said, thank you, that was very lovely of you to do that for me. That was lovely of you to think about me. That was lovely of you to take time for me and listen to my problem. I really appreciate that. Whatever comes from it doesn't matter. You cared. You cared and listened. You see, we're all second-rate citizens whenever we feel that the world owes us anything. And that's what that is. We feel the world owes us what everybody else gets. Well, you don't deserve anything. You don't have a right to anything. You create it in your world by your courtesy, by your love, by your integrity, by your caring. Now, things happen which make us have wonderful opportunities here. But they never happen when we are upset with ourselves and everybody else. The moment we're upset with anybody else, we close the door for our good. The moment we're upset, because that means we're upset with ourselves. The moment we are upset with ourselves, we close the door. The moment we're upset with anybody else, we close the door. And the moment that you think that your role is extremely important, then your role is denigrated. Your role is put down. It is sort of reduced in assumption and power. Now, some people over a period of time here have done typesetting on campus, or they have done proofreading, or they have done various other jobs, which were quite responsible jobs. But then they got the feeling that they were superior and that their choices were more important than anybody else's. And so I don't think any of you noticed what I was doing, but I took the job away from them and let them do something else and showed them that they were not indispensable. The only person that you are indispensable to is yourself. And if you don't like yourself and appreciate yourself and think that you are number one, then why should anybody else in the world? You say, well, Herb, why are you picking on us all the time? Why are you giving us a hard time? Giving you a hard time. I'm telling you, be number one. Delight in yourself. Appreciate yourself. Enjoy yourself. Don't go around thinking that you deserve things. You don't deserve anything. You don't even deserve a bed. You don't even deserve food. You only deserve, deserve is not the right word, you only get but you feel you are. If you're number one, you, of course, are getting everything that everybody else gets. If you're number 10, well, then you get what number 10 gets, which is very little. We want to recognize that it's almost as difficult to keep a first-class, first-rate person in a second-class job as it is to keep a second-rate person in a first-class job. Because a first-class job requires that you have personal integrity. And there's a term that is often used, and I think it's quite nice. Do your personal best. In anything you do, do your personal best. And don't expect a lot of credit for it. Now, yesterday, we printed up pictures of Irene's email that she sent through with a lot of pictures on, of their uni meeting in Switzerland. And I heard talk of it, and the pictures never came to me. And the email never came to me. Well, I'm number one, and I don't really care. And when they came to me today, because I happened to see them underneath a stack of other things here, I thought, hey, that's interesting. Hey, how about that? Lovely. And then I passed them on again. I said, Ingeborg, did you see these? Ingeborg, oh, yes, I have seen these. Ellen, did you see? Oh, yes, I have seen these. Sylvia, have you seen? Oh, yes, you didn't even say it, but you meant that, didn't you? Yes? Had you seen it?
Yes, I have.
All right, Joe, yes, I have seen these. I mean, don't give me a hard time now. You see, you're acting like a petulant child. Now, say, yes, I have seen these. Each of you said that, but you hadn't shown them to me. Now, that's not bad and that's not good. But the thing is, I should see everything, shouldn't I? If I don't know that we're having trouble with our water tank, or they're having trouble with the horse's footprints on our meditation paths, or that we're having trouble with whatever we're having trouble with, you know, whatever needs attention, not necessarily having trouble with, whatever needs attention, I cannot do the one thing that I do the best. Now, Ingeborg, what do I do the best? But my talent for what I do, the best that I can do. What is my genius?
To take it.
Watch it. What is my genius?
Your genius is to seeing it first of all perfect and okay.
Excellent. End. See, that's what my genius is. My genius is to see, okay, all is in divine order. You see, my genius isn't a lot of other stuff. It's all in divine order. Now, why do I give you opportunities to do things, to correct things in my office, like my computer or whatever like that, when I could easily do it myself? Why do I give you the opportunity to do that? So that you can feel superior of me? Or so that you can fix it? Or so that you have the opportunity to see your genius in that particular area? Well, I'm already a genius in that area. I do my own stuff, you know? Now, Ingeborg just loves to wait on people. That's her joy. Ingeborg just loves to do nice things for people, mending their clothing and all these other things, right? She just loves to do that. And she loves to take care of Wayfair cats who just can't make it on their own, or dogs or anything else. No. What does Ellen just love to do? Ellen just loves to think about her grandchildren and her children. She just loves to spend time on them and say, oh, how wonderful they are progressing. Now, Ellen is going to get a divorce. She's going to get a divorce from her grandchildren and her children, and she's going to marry into life where everyone is her creation. Everyone on the face of the earth is her creation, deserving equal attention. Not only her grandchildren, but deserving equal attention. You see, until she gets there, she's going to live a very limited life. And she will die a miserable old lady because she hasn't expanded herself to her universe. she hasn't included all of it. Now, what does a mother dog or cat do when one of the puppies or kittens is not going to make it?
She doesn't feed it.
She kicks it out of the nest. She doesn't feed it. Now, that's terrible. Oh, my goodness, that's terrible. No, not at all. The mother is interested in her welfare. She can only take care of the healthy dogs and cats. She cannot take care of the sick ones who do not want to live. Now, here at the monastery, whenever anybody doesn't want to live, I just ignore them. I don't care whether they're happy or unhappy. If they don't want to live, then they're not in my world. I only have a world that I create of people filled with people who want to live, people who want to be complete and dynamic, people who are first-rate people, first-rate citizens. And a first-rate citizen isn't black or white or brown. It isn't rich or poor. It isn't sick or healthy. A first-rate person is a person that likes himself. Just as simple as that. We had a young lady here the other day, and she was afraid of everything. She was afraid of dirt. She was afraid of the dogs. She was afraid of saying something wrong. And she was afraid of many things. And, hey, the moment she stops being afraid and starts liking herself for herself, she will be a glorious lady. She already is a mature lady, having gone through law school after graduating from high school, which takes at least 4 years, and having gone and through other things, and working in a law firm and so forth like that. You know what I mean? Now, you usually graduate from high school when you're 18, and then you go through 4 years of college, and then law school is another 2 or 3 years. That's 7 years. And then you're in the field working a little bit. And it's interesting in them, mm-hmm. Very interesting. And you see, I play the game that I'm young, that I'm 25, because it's true. Because I act 25, because I think 25, because I live in not necessarily a 25-year-old mind body, but I live in a youthful consciousness. I could say I'm youthful, but it's difficult for people to perceive that unless they have an age to put with it. And you look at some people, and they look very youthful. But then you talk to them, and they have old ideas. And I don't mean sage ideas. I mean ideas of decrepitude, you know. We want to be young, youthful, dynamic in our thinking, in our actions, in our attitudes, in our life, in our body, in our affairs. We want to be first-rate citizens. And first-rate is a wonderful thing to be. Now, are we willing to give up the old images that we've had of ourselves? Can I go to Ellen and say, Ellen, I want you to give it to me. Ellen says, what do you want? I want you to give it to me. She said, well, what do you want? I said, you know what I want. I want your motherhood. I want your possession of your children. I want the feeling that you have a family who takes your first attention. You have these things, you see. I want that. But I want to give you something if you're willing to give that up. Oh, you are? What are you going to give me, you know? And first you have to be willing to give it up and enter into the nothingness. And when you give it up and have given it freely, then I can say, here is the world. Here is the universe. Here is your creation. All, not just limited. Can you imagine God liking some of his creation better than others?
No.
Can you imagine that?
No.
Wouldn't that be a terrible type of God to live with? And God, Abraham Lincoln said, God must have liked the poor people. He made so many of them. Well, God liked everybody. God is in everybody. God is everybody. Everybody is God. But just from this exoteric type of view, can you imagine A father liking some of his children better than others. Some children feel that way because they're cooperative and they work with their dad, while other children are working against their dad and they feel they're not getting the same thing. But you see, a first-class citizen does not fight. He flows. He flows in harmony with all of life because there's nothing to fight. Nobody is against a first-class citizen. Nobody's against a second-class citizen, a second-rate citizen. And this has nothing to do with a caste, nothing to do with color, nothing to do with age, nothing to do with abundance or health or anything. It has only to do with what we believe about ourselves. Now, Sylvia, who are you?
Well, I am God.
Ellen, who are you?
I'm God.
Who are you, Ingeborg? Ingeborg, let's just stop a minute. What am I talking about? What am I talking about? I'm talking about first and second rate citizens, and I'm talking about 100th citizens. Now, Ingeborg, what are you?
First.
I'm helping you. You're a first class citizen. You bet your life. And Ellen?
First class citizen.
And Sylvia?
First class citizen.
You see, that's what I'm talking about. And when I give a lecture and I'm talking about these things, I would hope that I got the message across. Now, that you're God is obvious. But are you a first-class God? Are you a first-class citizen? Or are you a slave to everybody else, you know? Are you a slave to everybody else, Ingeborg?
Sometimes, yes.
No! No! No, Ingeborg. Don't say sometimes yes. Say, I am never a slave to anybody else. I'm only living what I love to do and what makes me happy. Now, Ingeborg, do I have a whip that's strong enough that I could ever force you to do something you didn't want to do? Could I ever force you to do something you didn't want to do? Really? No. You can say that out loud because, you know, that we're not on video here. Hmm?
You will not.
What?
You cannot do it.
You know, ladies and gentlemen of the internet audience here, it's so difficult to get people to do things in an honorable way. I say, here's the question. Do you want any ice cream? And the answer is, I want chocolate. I want vanilla. Shut up. Do you want any ice cream? Yes. Now what kind do you want? But first you say yes or no. Because if it's no, we don't have to discuss what kind you want, do we? But if it's yes, then we say, okay, now what kind would you like? Now, learn to answer the question with the answer that it requires. And the answer required of a yes and no question is yes or no. Then you go on into all the vicissitudes of other type of thinking, and that's great. Now, can I take a whip and force you to do something you don't want to do, Ingeborg?
No.
She was shaking her head like a banshee there, and then finally she said no. But say it out loud.
No.
Wonderful. Now, if I could stroke you and say, oh, Ingeborg, you're so wonderful, would you wash my shirt for me? And she'd say, oh, Herb, you just know how to make me feel so good. Yes, I'll wash your shirt. You know, But Ingeborg, I want you to wash my shirt. If you don't wash it, I'm just going to badger you and get after you, and I'm going to beat you up, you know. And she says, you go right ahead. I am my own master. I choose to do what I choose to do. Now, you see, you are. We all are. And no one can ever force us to do anything that we don't want to do. Some women say they were raped. They weren't raped. They could have denied that person that activity, but they might have been hurt in the process. But what is better, to stand up for the truth and stand up for who you are? You know, we say, oh, sure, Herb, you know, you're a philosopher. You never had any of these experiences. Well, don't kid yourself. I was in the Second World War, and I made that war into a wonderful comedy for me. And I never had to shoot anybody or hurt anybody or do anything bad. All I did was share philosophy in the whole war. And I was just a young 18-year-old kid when I went in, you know? And I wasn't old enough to know yet. But that was my love for life. That was my love for everything. I'd go down to make a thing for the captain in the woodworking shop, and the guys in the woodworking shop, you're making that for the captain? He's going to see that coming from here. You sit down there, Barley. We'll do it. And then, but don't tell the captain we did it, because then the captain will send us to do more stuff. You know, just tell him you did it and take the credit, you know. Well, I said, here you are, captain. You asked for it. Thank you, Barley. I knew I could always depend on you. But you see, enjoy it. I didn't have to lie to the captain. He just presumed what he wanted to presume. But I told him, here it is, captain. Here's what you wanted. Now, if the captain said to me, Barley, I want you to go down to the plumbing shop and put together the plumbing material for my sink in my head, because it's not operating perfectly. And I would say, I will attend to it for you. You understand? That doesn't mean I will do it. I will attend to it for you. So I went down to the plumbing shop, and I said to the boys in the plumbing shop, the captain's head's not running. We got to get that thing running before he blows the gasket. You know? And right away, that became number one order. And the men came up there, probably more than I needed. And they got to work on this sink. And they polished it, and they cleaned it, and they put new pipes in it, and they made it all perfect. And, you know, in just a very short time. And the captain didn't even know this was going on. And then they all went back to their place. And I went to the captain. I said, it's finished, sir. And he said, I knew I could always depend on you, Barley. And, you know, this is the image you want of yourself. I can always depend on you, you know? Now, you don't have to lie. You don't have to do it yourself. You merely have to put it into motion. Now, are you ready to say that you're a first-class citizen and you can put anything into motion? When Ellen came here, she didn't know beans about running a big organization and maintaining acres of land with houses and plumbing and all the other stuff. But she didn't let that bother her. She didn't let her stupidity bother her because she wasn't stupid. You know what she did? You know what she did, Ingeborg? Can you tell me? What did she do?
She succeeded in everything.
Sylvie, what did Ingeborg, what did Sylvie, Ellen do when she had a problem?
She,
Come. She called the...
plumber.
There you go. My God, here I told you the answer with the captain and all that other sort of stuff, and you're so slow at coming up with it. Just let it go. You knew the answer. She called the plumber. And the plumber says, hey, this is a new one for me. I'll have to call in my associates, you know. And, but the answer was there. You weren't worried. You put it in capable hands, and it was done. Now, let's each of us put our lives in capable hands. Let's put it in God's hands. God, help me, please! We put it in God's hands. And where do you find God? I want you to go to God. Ingeborg, don't do that. Say it.
Within myself.
Thank you, sir. Because this is not a video camera. Within myself. Jesus said, go to the Father who seeth in secret, and he will reward you openly. And the kingdom of heaven is within you. So we go to the Father within, to our divine self. And then, Ellen, what is the phrase that you have been teaching your children and grandchildren?
All is in divine
self. Oh, my God, you got it. You got it. You got it. All is in divine order. And isn't that wonderful? Now, how many of you have just all become first-rate citizens?
All of us. I.
Ellen, I would like you to think that you can only speak for yourself.
Right, I.
Okay, so the only one here who can become a first-rate citizen is Ellen. No, you're too late. You're too late. You're an hour late and a dollar short, you know. Ingeborg, when is time?
Now. Immediately.
Now is the correct word. Immediately now. But now. And so, if you do not respond now, you lost it. You lost it. Until the next time I ask you. All right. Who is a first-rate citizen here?
I.
One. Are you not?
Yes.
I did. Yes. My goodness sake, such a little wimpy yes. Mm. My goodness. Well, I must say, I've badgered you now for 30 minutes. I probably ought to let you go. I love you very much, and it's almost as difficult to keep a first-rate person in a second-class job as to keep a second-rate person in a first-class job. And I would enjoy very much seeing all of you, all of the time, as first-rate people. I love you. 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 I love you.